We've heard a lot about going back to school in the fall from parents and teachers and administrators, but what do the students think?
We weren't seeing a lot of research focused on the students themselves.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear the results of a junior achievement survey. We'll also learn how the Army is adjusting its recruiting strategy, look at the results of distance learning, and spend an academic minute respecting digital literacy. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. The debate about reopening schools in the fall continues, with advocates on all sides arguing for what they believe is the best way forward. Some are calling for a full reopening with students in school all day, every day, while others are calling for continued distance learning until the pandemic eases. And of course, there are those in the middle calling for a little bit of both. School administrators are talking to faculty and staff as well as parent groups to make the best decision for their districts. But what do the students think? To find out, we spoke to Ed Grahalski, a senior vice president with Junior Achievement USA. JA just released the results of a survey of students in the U.S. about how they feel about going back to school this year. I talked to Mr. Grahalski about the survey and about the research.
So at Junior Achievement, we do surveys periodically to really get teens' perspectives on some of the things that are out there that affect their lives. And one of the things that we noticed with all conversations around back to school and whether it would be in person or virtual or a blended approach, there were a lot of conversations, you know, about parents and policymakers and teachers, and we weren't seeing a lot of research focused on the students themselves. And so we decided to really get students' perspective on what's happening with the new normal and how it might impact them as they go back to school.
And what age group students did you talk to?
So we conducted a survey with Engine Insights with 1,000 teens between the ages of 13 and 17. So you're talking primarily middle school and high school students.
And, well, let's not keep people in suspense. What were some of the findings? Are students feeling a little anxious?
Yeah, students are as concerned as adults when it comes to going back to school in person. The survey found that 66% specifically said that they were concerned. And of the total group of students, 39% said they were either extremely or very concerned about going back to school in person. And in addition to that, they said 71% of them said their parents were concerned about them going back to school. So, you know, it's not just isolated to adults. You know, the students themselves are also thinking a great deal about this and are also, you know, have the same kind of worries that we do as adults.
Are they primarily concerned about health or are there other issues?
Yeah, so when we ask them about concerns for the future, you know, it's probably tied a bit to the health piece. There were about 47% of them said that they're concerned about either themselves getting sick or a member of their family getting sick from COVID. But looking broader into the future, some of the other concerns that they had were 49% said that they were really worried about the quality of their education and how that's being impacted by the pandemic. And, you know, also kind of, you know, disconcertingly, 28% said that they were worried that their dreams for the future aren't going to come true because of current circumstances. So, again, a lot weighing on the minds of young people these days.
I'm sure a lot of these older high school students are taking a look at the people who just graduated into who knows what and are saying, well, yeah. What's next for me?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing a lot of research around this. When COVID first started, and we've done a few surveys since then, it really is having a big impact. You know, the class of 2020, you know, all the images of the, you know, the social distance graduation or the online graduations. And, the fact that a lot of these folks who just finished high school or just finished college are, you know, living back at home, may not even be working, may not be continuing with colleges they had planned going forward. So obviously that's something that, does impact those kids that are in school right now, either as a junior or as a senior, in terms of what their future is going to look like.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of that has to do with, you know, there are no jobs that they were training for.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we found from additional research that we've done is about 40% of teens who just graduated high school, for instance, are working. But what's interesting and kind of, again, kind of disconcerting is that a good portion of those kids are saying that they or their families are depending on that income for living expenses. So it's a tough situation. I mean, you've got a lot of unemployed people in the country right now. And so money is as much a factor as access to education, especially when it looks at, you know, if you're looking at going to college or continuing education after high school. It's not even just a case of access to that classroom. It's how you're going to pay for it. So, again, a lot of things that are playing into this right now.
Was there any mention, too, of missing out on the classic college experience?
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly one of the factors when it comes to the class of 2020 and what they're looking forward to with college. Not being able to have that in-person experience, not being able to participate in, you know, sporting events, you know, just the experience of staying in a dorm, which, you know, I mean, it can be an interesting experience in and of itself, but just the fact that they're not even being given that opportunity, that certainly weighs on teens as well.
Let's circle back just a little bit to junior achievement. What is junior achievement doing these days for students, and how has that changed in the last 5 or 6 months?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, we're doing a lot more virtually and online. We actually had started an initiative about 5 years ago to transition into what they call blended learning model. So it was a combination of in-person and technology. And so what we've done is we've really utilized that to deliver programs. And a lot of our emphasis is really about hope and promise and encouragement for kids right now, because it is, you know, given, you know, some of the fact that there are these concerns about what's going to happen in the future, what we're doing is really trying to provide information to them about, okay, these are careers that make sense even in the current environment. These are the things you can do to continue preparing going forward, because one of the things we don't want kids to do is kind of give up, you know, and I'm talking in short term, right? You know, in terms of, okay, well, we're just going to kind of muddle through school this year, or we're going to take the gap year without really having, you know, for college, without really having a plan of what else I'm going to do. So we're really trying to get kids information that they can use to continue planning and moving forward, you know, versus just being in a holding pattern for a year or 18. That's how long it takes until we get to a point where we'll have some semblance of normalcy. So those are a lot of things that we're focusing on right now.
Are you hoping that more people take this tack and say, you know, let's find out what the students actually feel?
Yeah, I think it's critically important. I mean, one of the things that we've done is research on, and it's kind of a case study when we look at Generation Z, the current generation. We've looked back at millennials, with kind of what they went through both with 9/11 and the Great Recession. And there probably wasn't enough focus on millennials. Not to say all millennials were impacted this way, but that they're, you know, we've seen people in the groups in the millennial generation that are more apprehensive about taking on risk when it comes to investment, starting a business. You know, they kind of got delayed a bit in starting their careers and so accumulated more debt. So this could be a vicious cycle, and we're really trying to get ahead of it with Generation Z and making sure that people are having those conversations, getting their perspectives on things, and really connecting with them to try to overcome some of those challenges that the millennials went through.
There must be a certain mindset of, well, there's a, like restaurants, there's a business I'm never going to start because, you know, look what can happen.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and again, what's interesting in a situation like a restaurant is a lot of them, granted their revenues overall are down, but a lot of them have gotten very innovative and creative in the way they're delivering their product. So there is something to be said about a situation like this that kind of pushes business to think about things differently. And so I don't think you're necessarily going to see teens, if they're really interested in food and the culinary arts and want to do something like this, I don't think ultimately that's going to, you know, dissuade them from doing it, but it may take them longer to explore something like that. And again, one of the things that we saw with millennials is a huge accumulation of college debt during that period, because what happened is a lot of millennials, when there weren't jobs, just started going into college. and a lot of them took on more debt than maybe they normally would have. And as a result, a lot of millennials are having to pay that off. It's a little, it's almost like the opposite this time, because what you're seeing is those Generation Z, they're like saying, well, I was going to go for the more expensive in-person experience, but if I do have to do college, it's going to be the less expensive online version. So it's going to be a different situation, but, you know, our goal is to really get them the information and resources they need to make some informed decisions about their futures.
Overall, are you finding students of a certain age are becoming more or less business-oriented or entrepreneurial?
So what was really interesting, we recently did a JA alumni study. And, you know, the trend with entrepreneurship, especially since the Great Recession, has been that millennials have been a little bit more risk-averse about starting businesses. But what we found is that JA alumni who are millennials were actually more inclined to start businesses than the general population. And so we think if you get that kind of education in front of kids, especially when they're young, and there's a lot of data, not just JA data, a lot of data out there that if, you know, teenagers start a business or two while they're teenagers, they're actually going to be more inclined to become an entrepreneur later in life. And so that's certainly one of the things that we're trying to do, is eliminate some of the mystique around being a business owner and really putting risk into perspective and giving them the information they need to be comfortable or confident, you know, undertaking, you know, starting a business. So those are a lot of things that we are focusing on during all of this. One of the things that we're focusing on is virtual volunteering, which is another area that we were developing. So what we're doing is creating opportunities for folks who would normally volunteer in the classroom to do it digitally, either through recordings of their experiences, or the other thing is, as schools get up to speed, doing direct presentations into classrooms over Zoom and other technology platforms. So again, that's another thing that we're working on. And certainly if there are folks that are interested in learning more about JA, you know, they can certainly come visit JA.org and see what we're up to.
Ed Grahalski is a senior vice president with Junior Achievement USA. You can learn more about the results of their back-to-school survey at JA.org. Army recruiters typically look for future soldiers at high schools and career fairs, but COVID-19 has forced the service to scale back face-to-face interactions, and the pandemic has revealed gaps in the Army's digital outreach strategy. Carson Frame reports for the American Homefront Project.
As the coronavirus pandemic bloomed this spring, the Army reduced staff at many brick-and-mortar recruiting stations across the country. Recruiters took their work remote, but lost out on some of the major recruitment opportunities that normally boost their numbers.
That last moment before a senior leaves their high school, typically we're there. We're helping them support, finding them different avenues. However, we didn't have that moment this year.
Staff Sergeant Kara Wilson recruits from a 2,600-square-mile patch of West Texas with its hub in El Paso. She and her team have had to build an online recruiting environment to reach those same young people. Apps like Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat have proven the most effective, and Wilson's designed new campaigns for each, but she's had help.
I have teenagers at home, so they have kind of schooled me on many of these new platforms, which allows me to get after the Generation Zs.
Wilson says one of her best attempts was a 45-minute Instagram live Q&A about what it's like to be an Army soldier. She promoted it for weeks and posted a countdown to her feed. More than 300 people tuned in. The idea was her 14-year-old daughter's.
She said, you know, Mom, I'm your kid. She was raised in the Army. But she said, other people just see you as like a soldier. So what if you did a meeting with somebody else, maybe a friend of yours in the Army, and you guys did like a question and answer thing? And I thought, wow, that's awesome.
Online fitness challenges, esports tournaments, and video testimonials are other ways Army recruiters have tried to grab the attention of young people online. Even before the pandemic hit, the Army was working to incorporate more digital outreach into its marketing. But it wasn't doing it especially well, according to Emma Moore, a researcher with the Military Veterans and Society Program at the Center for New American Security.
The digital engagement was showing gains, but I would say from probably most other private company and marketing measures, it's been ad hoc. The Army is not set up to be incredibly flexible and responsive to changing their narrative or their marketing campaign.
That's a disadvantage in the digital space, where apps and communication platforms quickly evolve. The Army has backed off its top-down approach to recruiting and has given local recruiters more authority to design their own social media campaigns, like the Instagram event that Wilson held. General Frank Muth heads Army recruiting.
Especially with technology, there's innovations happening every day. And we've got to be able to not be so much a hierarchical organization that just validates the systems you put into place, but be a network.
Things are starting to look up numbers-wise for Army recruiting since the pandemic began. Muth says there was an initial dip following the issuance of stay-at-home orders, but that interest from young people is slowly ticking back up. He adds that virtual outreach is here to stay, and that about 90% of the recruiting process can be done online.
And I think at the end of the day, what we'll find is that we may be able to reduce some of our recruiting force and reduce some of their brick and mortar, maybe not not use the brick and mortar anymore because it still has a place, but maybe it doesn't need to be as big.
Muth says the pandemic's full impact on recruitment is unclear, but he guesses that if unemployment hasn't gone down by fall, the Army will see a bump in people wanting to join. I'm Carson Frame in San Antonio.
Still to come, a college professor looks at what distance learning has meant for students so far. That story's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. A college professor whose course includes a digital cleanse says switching to online teaching in light of COVID-19 has produced some interesting results. The Best of Our Knowledge's Allison Dunn spoke with Manhattanville College visiting assistant professor Joni Sahani about her digital socialization course and how the pandemic helped breed interpersonal communication skills.
Well, at Manhattanville College, I was so happy to be a part of the school early on a couple of years ago because I was brought in for a very innovative approach to interpersonal communication, digital socialization of students, to really examine how an entire population, we're calling them the Zillennials now, Allison, this is the first generation who were totally socialized through a digital realm. And this has been my focus since 2007, literally the year that Facebook went public. And I just was noticing the changes. And what I discovered by 2011, 2012, I was noticing that students were not communicating in a way that will have their needs met. Technology changes, humans don't. But for this generation, they came in and they're like, part of this major social science experiment. We're going to take everything that we knew about human communication and put it on the back burner, and now we're going to communicate with our thumbs. And it was literally a student in my class came in, threw his Verizon flip phone across the room, this was 2006, and looked at me and said, Siani, I'm telling you, when we start communicating with our thumbs, we're in trouble. And that was sort of my first, like, wait a minute, there's something else happening here. Fast forward a decade later, we're now seeing the anxiety, the depression, and the effects of not communicating in a way that we're heard and understood. It became very performance-driven. Who am I? My brand? What are people saying? How many likes? Am I personally being relevant by my social media feed? And then as the pandemic hit in the spring of this year, everyone kind of knew that I did this class where we step away from social media for a week. So in the beginning, I kind of got a lot of, oh, what are you going to do now? Like, thank God for social media, Siani, because how else would we connect with people? And I'm like, not sure. And my students, I was like, listen, this is new territory. If you feel you're going to be isolated without being on social media for a week as part of this class, let me know. I was shocked that the Manhattanville students said, no, we're all in. We're doing this. We created this workbook that they could monitor their anxiety, that they can reflect on a day-to-day basis. And we focused on, here are the skills to communicate on a deeper level, because we're all feeling sad and off-put and scared. And none of this can be resolved through a social media post. And how can you then pick up the phone and call somebody confidently and effectively, being able to say, hey, Allison, I'm assuming you're home because we're in a pandemic. Just wanted to check to see how you were feeling. Communicating on this deeper level allowed students to connect more deeply, and literally they just felt better. I discovered this when we did our film, Selling Your Soul, in 2013, and it has been so consistent for the past 7 years that we have to get back to teaching these fundamental skills to be heard, to be understood. Students had options of working on certain relationships. Remember, a lot of kids all of a sudden found themselves back in their home with their entire families. If some kids were in their family and they didn't get along with a parent or a step parent, or we had Zoom calls where grandparents were walking into their Zoom meetings and were like, hello, how are you? Let's, you know, and we invited grandparents literally to communicate with us in class, which was hysterical. But what students discovered was, as one student said, I used the phone call conversation to call a coach. And during the conversation, I could tell that he picked up on how anxious I was about the fall. He comforted me and he calmed me down. And I know, and I mean, this is this big hockey playing kid. He's like, I know that that never would have happened if it was in a text or an email. We're literally having students discover the power of authentically connecting by doing this compare and contrast exercises. And it was so sweet. One kid was going, do you know you can literally hear somebody smile in a phone call?
Siani's independent film, Selling Your Soul, has been re-released on Amazon. It examines the first digitally socialized generation's relationship with digital devices and what to do about it. She says the 7-year-old documentary is relevant today and that her current students feel the same as those in her film. Now, Siani says it took the pandemic for young people to understand and feel that there is a big difference between having social needs met authentically as opposed to through their digital experiences.
In the film, we called it a digital cleanse, but literally after we did the film, what we discovered was the reason students got so into doing it, where I didn't have to, you know, twist anyone's arm, they wanted to do it, was we spent 8 weeks building the skills first, introducing them to empathetic listening. And then by the time the 8 weeks is up, inherently, a student starts to say, you know what? I kind of want to see. I actually want to see how I do with these new skills. So it's very different than just these courses that just go like, oh, just go without something. And we're like, no. You have to journal. You have to compare and contrast your emotional reaction during this week. And the journaling becomes really the pivotal part. How did it feel to connect on a deeper level? That's really where they discover, oh, it's really not the same. And so the pandemic part was interesting because for the first time, a lot of students are now being able to say and feel, oh, authentically connecting, we are human, we are social by nature, I need people. Like, social media is not just an equitable substitute. The last line of my film is literally this kid saying, you can't take human interaction out of the equation, because that's how it began and that's where we need to move forward.
She says it's also important to learn to listen with empathy and patience.
That was one of the things that a lot of students said. I was really happy that I had the patience to literally listen to my mother. And just, because I always say listening is love. And listening to somebody, giving them your full time and attention, is the most loving thing you can do and can literally change a relationship.
Author and independent filmmaker Joni Ciani is a visiting assistant professor at Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York. Reporting for the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Allison Dunn.
To succeed in school, especially in the age of COVID-19, a student needs to be digitally literate. But are students being respected for that digital literacy? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Digital literacy skills suddenly have become very important to learning. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Gina Baleria, assistant professor in the Department of Communication and Media Studies at Sonoma State University, examines how these skills can bring belonging to students who aren't together.
Our students see their phones and tablets as portals to real spaces where they engage in relationships with teachers, coworkers, peers, friends, and family. But many students have not been taught the digital media literacy skills needed to navigate digital spaces, assess and decipher messages, and communicate in ways that are productive, respectful, and empathetic. This can make some students feel they don't belong and cause them to discontinue their studies. Our national discourse is not helping. Differences have grown into deep divisions across countless parameters. These divides can lead us to marginalize and other those who are different, impairing our ability to work together to solve community problems. To address these challenges, I created a digital video engagement space called mismatch.org, where students could share and listen to stories with someone who's different in one or more socially salient ways. The goal was to explore how this type of semi-structured micro-intervention influenced belonging and curiosity. Why belonging and curiosity? When students feel as if they belong, as if they're a part of something, they stay engaged. And so increasing a sense of belonging can help students persist to graduation. As for curiosity, when students are curious about each other, they may want to learn more, potentially then letting go of stereotypes and seeing others as fully formed people. My research found that students did become more curious about each other. They did feel a greater sense of belonging, and they found commonality, helping them see their other as a person. Mismatch has now evolved to help students share and listen to stories, improve digital media literacy skills, and increase belonging and curiosity.
That was Gina Baleria of Sonoma State University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.
Thank you.